Currently, there is a lot of talk about economics and people's financial struggles and needs and so on. This is not new news. This has been going on probably since the invention of barter or coinage in the world. I want to talk about this idea of which people or who can afford to live to be 120 and healthy. Are you one of those people that can afford to be and live to 120 and healthy? There are a lot of published stories right now about the cost of sick care. And I say sick care because what is referred to as health care is not actually health care. It's something you get when you're sick. So it is sick care. And it's really designed for the treatment of sickness versus the prevention or the cure of sickness. And in these published stories, you see a lot about what the pharmaceutical industry is trying to do, come up with a drug that can be recommended and prescribed for people years and years before the possible onset of an illness. This is particularly true of Alzheimer's. Alzheimer's is seen as a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow for the pharmaceutical industry. They have their eyes set on a drug that could be prescribed 20 years before a person possibly could have symptoms. Can you imagine how much money you could make if you could sell something to everybody 20 years before they could possibly need it? And there's no telling what kind of side effects, of course, come from those pharmaceuticals. But how lucrative that will be. That has all of those folks drooling to jump into that pool of money. And then some people who think in terms of longevity are talking about new medical technologies, this device and that device and this device and that device. And all of that has combined to convince people to look at health and primarily illness in financial terms. The results are this, that people believe they don't have the money they need to be healthy, or others who have money believe just because they do have money that they are almost guaranteed health and happiness. Both of those groups, those that think that money is the key ingredient to health, and those that think just because they have money they are guaranteed health, both of those groups are incorrect. In the United States, it's in studies, it is recognized that about 70% of the deaths that occur are directly associated with lifestyle choices of the person who dies. Obviously, if an activity is part of a person's lifestyle, they somehow have decided that they can financially afford that activity. When I got out of the U.S. Army in December 1974, I decided to quit smoking cigarettes. I had two main reasons. One, I realized that I was a slave to nicotine, and the loss of my freedom was a higher price than I was willing to pay any longer. So I knew I needed and wanted to quit smoking so I could experience freedom again and escape from that slavery that I self-imposed. The second reason was the cost of cigarettes recently had doubled for me, and that made me furious. I was angry that a pack of Winston cigarettes, which is what I smoked, went from 10 cents a pack up to 20 cents a pack. A carton no longer cost me $1, it cost me $2. I thought that cost was outrageous, and it made me furious. Recently, as I was driving back to Florida from New York, I was in a gas station's convenience store on I-95. I watched a young woman hunt through her wallet with a level of desperation that I'm familiar with. She was looking for money to buy a pack of cigarettes. And as I watched that struggle going on, you know, she's searching, hoping that the money was there, I thought that that purchase was not in her best interest, but she was going to do it anyway. I just watched, and she looked mighty relieved to be walking out of that store with a pack of cigarettes in her hands. I thought mathematically that if that pack of cigarettes cost her $7, and I think it actually cost more, and she smokes only one pack a day, that at the end of 30 days, she would have spent $210 buying cigarettes. And if she works for a living, and she appeared to be like a working girl, she would have had to earn about $300 before taxes just to support her nicotine habit. If you think about overweight cigarette smokers who also drink alcohol and are sedentary in front of an expensive television and maybe watching through their expensive cable TV entertainment package or their satellite TV entertainment package, you can see what they believe they can afford. And to really amaze yourself, watch at a Starbucks. Just watch a rabid Starbucks coffee drinker spending $3 to $5 once a day, maybe even multiple times a day, buying coffee with, about 17 words that describe it. You will ask yourself, how can they afford this? The answer is, they really can't. They can't financially afford it, but they do it because they value it. I've noticed in myself and in others that we, in quotes, we can afford, in quotes, what we value, and we believe we can't afford what we don't value. And the obvious problems with some lifestyle choices is that we value activities and substances that are harmful to us, to our bodies, and to our relationships. But because we value them, we do them anyway. Can you and I afford to walk? Learning to walk was a huge accomplishment for us when we were toddlers. Then along came bicycles, roller skates, and then cars. About that time, we focused our learning on how to avoid walking. Our avoidance of walking wasn't due to the cost of walking or the harm that walking could do to us or could cause. Nope. We avoided walking because we no longer valued it. Value association changes everything. If you value it, you will probably do it. If you don't value it, you probably will not do it. Just as driving a car makes us feel cool, we do many other things for those same purposes. Being cool, looking good, getting approval from our peers or other people. It seems true to me that much, if not all, of human effort is devoted to activities that will result in increasing and maintaining our energy. Maintaining it, or that's maybe the worst case, and we certainly do not want to lose it. So we want to increase it or maintain it and not lose it. I drink coffee. I may say, I drink coffee because I like the taste of coffee, just like people have said to me, I smoke cigarettes because I like the taste of cigarettes. That's ridiculous. And for me, with the coffee, that wouldn't be the whole truth. I drink coffee because it's stimulating. Said another way, because it gives me energy. I drink coffee to get more energy, just like I do a lot of things, just like you do a lot of things. I just did something an hour or so ago for a friend. It was kind. Guess why? I did it because it made me feel good. So now I have good feelings. I have more energy. And the friend I did it for has more energy. So, yeah. Sometimes I exercise because I know it will give me more energy, and I exercise just before this talk. But other times, I don't exercise because I feel like I don't have enough energy, and I better hold on to the energy that I have. I just need to maintain it. I don't want to take a chance on risking it, even though I know you don't lose energy when you exercise. You only gain it. And what changes that gain, loss, is like a faucet that turns it on or off. and that is a belief. If I believe something to be true, I will make it true. If I believe something to be false, I'm going to get that result as well. What we do and what we don't do can be seen in that framework. Is this going to give me more energy, or am I at risk of losing energy? More or less? More or less? And when you recognize this is going on in your own life, you can see these decision points, and you go, well, let me think this through. Let me just not react to it like I've reacted for days, weeks, months, and maybe even years and decades. I regularly talk about energy exchange experiences. We exchange energy all day, every day. I'm sitting in a chair. I'm exchanging energy with it. I'm talking. I'm exchanging energy. I'm breathing. I'm inhaling and exhaling. I'm exchanging energy. I'm thinking. I'm exchanging energy. I'm going to be touching this keyboard in a while. I'm exchanging energy. You're listening. You're exchanging energy. Exchanging energy proves we are alive, and it's one way to stay alive. To cause effects, which I think we're destined to do by our very natures, we must exchange energy. To create and express ourselves and anything and everything in the world, we must exchange energy. If we think we have enough energy, or that the exchange will result in our gaining energy, we will engage in that energy exchange experience. If we feel like we don't have enough energy, or that the energy exchange experience will end up as an energy loss, we will tend to avoid that exchange. To me, this is the basis of procrastination. Procrastination is built on the imagined energy loss that would follow if we took the action. So we back up when we consider that action. Too risky. I'm going to get bad feelings. I'm going to lose energy. And when you really think of it, the energy loss that occurs due to an activity is largely due to our own judgment of ourselves, our own self-criticism, our own self-disapproval, rather than somebody on the outside going, oh, you did a bad job, that's not okay, you shouldn't have done that, you should have hired somebody, or so on. I don't gamble. I've been in casinos, I've been in Las Vegas multiple times, I've been in other places that have legalized gambling, but I don't gamble. You know why? Because I know the odds are stacked against the gambler. That means the likelihood of loss is very high. Guess what? I don't want to lose energy. Energy in the form of my quarters or dollars, I don't want to do that. That's not going to be satisfactory to me. But some people like to gamble. They must be able to overlook the odds that they will lose, and they get energy out of the possible rewards, the actions that they're taking, maybe the excitement or the fun or that jackpot that they hope will be theirs at the end of the night, or some other feelings of energetic gain. Maybe it's, I don't know what, but they clearly are doing something, and they go back again and again and again. This is the challenge with somebody who is addicted to gambling. Despite all of their experiences of loss, somehow that glimmer of hope, of reward, keeps them going back. Consider this possibility. All your actions are designed to help you get more energy, maintain the energy that you have, and prevent the loss of your energy. Now, that's the third time I've said it in this talk, but that was the clearest expression of it. And if we're more aware, then the choices that we make about the actions we take, the thoughts we think, the feelings we feel, the words we speak, are likely to make us actually accomplish the goal of increasing our energy, maintaining our energy, or not losing our energy. But if we're unaware, we're not able to process information correctly or accurately or environmental signals effectively, then the actions we take are likely to fail to help us. We will end up not gaining energy or not maintaining energy, but in fact losing energy because we didn't understand how to accomplish our goals. At various times in our lives, we're going to be afraid of dealing with the challenges that we face. Being afraid is not the problem, because being afraid is a natural occurrence. It is an indication, it's a signal. Get more information. Gain more awareness. Ask questions. Get information coming to you. So being afraid is not the problem. Staying afraid is the problem. Staying afraid is the problem. Before we could walk, we couldn't walk, and we couldn't even stand up. But little by little, we developed physically, mentally, and emotionally to attempt to stand up. We developed the will that we were now ready to try to stand up. And then, sometime later, to take those first steps. And eventually we succeeded. We succeeded in standing, and then we succeeded when we took our first steps. And guess what? Most of us became skilled at walking. If we saw the similarity between learning to stand up and then walk and facing challenges in our adult lives today, we would be able to draw in the energies needed to successfully handle our day-to-day challenges. It is this drawing in energy so we develop our will, we develop our purpose, and we get the insight and awareness necessary in order to accomplish handling effectively our challenges today. Too often in life, people assume they either have it or don't have it with regard to intelligence, health, money, looks, good fortune, and so on. They have a fixed mindset that convinces them that they are exactly what they were born with, and that is that. Period. End of story. They believe the beliefs that they thought up. And they made up. The beliefs are just made up. And worse yet, those beliefs are often disempowering. And because they believe they can't do anything about it, they're stuck with whatever was enforced upon them and whatever they made up under stress when they were small children. That is a problem. Those people will not be able to afford to live to be 120 and healthy. This underestimation of our ability to grow on all levels creates stress, because we're going to face challenges. I mean, that's the nature of life. We're going to face challenges. Not everything is going to be smooth sailing or a flat walk or even downhill walk. It's going to require will and purpose and a lot of energy and a constant reaching out in thought and feeling to try to gain information and insight and knowledge about how to handle something. So if we underestimate our ability to do that, we're going to end up with depression, nothing I can do about it, or anger, I hate that there's nothing I can do about it, or illness. All of that's going to result in unhappiness, and then you continue on that path, it leads to death. For a person to believe you can't meet your own needs triggers all sorts of negative repercussions. That phrase, in quotes, meeting your own needs, is just another way of saying increasing or maintaining your energies and not losing it, so that you can protect your individuality. If you can meet your own needs and acquire the food that you need, or the money that you need, or the love that you need, or the attention that you need, or the shelter that you need, or the fun that you need, or the opportunity that you need, you're going to be able to maintain your individuality for a much longer period of time than somebody who cannot protect themselves. Some people believe they can't meet their own needs, and that belief, if they maintain it, it's basically a refusal to accept growth as a natural process. Oh, well, when I was five, I realized I wasn't good with fill in the blank. What are you going to do? What are you going to do with that? Yeah, of course that has to be upgraded. It was like, at that moment in time, didn't make it a truth. It just made it an incoming energy in an energy exchange experience that was interpreted in a single way. It didn't make it be true. And if we hold on to it that it's true, it turns into a very, very heavy weight, which will cause that depression. It's like putting a huge amount of weight on top of your head or your shoulders. It will press us down. It'll squash us. Or when we fight that feeling, it'll deliver us into the emotional state of anger. And somebody who pings back and forth between those two energies, depression and anger, basically are experiencing victimhood. I'm a victim. I hate being a victim. And they end up pinging between victim and victimizer. Depending on skill level, maybe even gender, there's a tendency to, you know what, I need to use charm or manipulation to get what I want. Or I want to bully somebody to deliver what I want. All of that results in a failure to grow. You and I would look at that as, oh, that person didn't mature. They're still stuck in a childhood belief that their needs have to be met by somebody outside because they can't do it. That is a childhood attitude. And for a child, it makes perfect sense. Because who wants a one-year-old or a two-year-old or a toddler to be making themselves breakfast? No, we don't expect that. But to hold on to that belief that we can't meet our own needs will be deadly. The ability to think offers all kinds of possibilities. To rethink about something we have thought allows us to grow, to upgrade, to update our thoughts, and, by extension, the way we feel about our previous energy exchange experiences, the way we feel about ourselves, the way we feel about other participants, and the possibilities of life. If we can't learn from our experiences, we are doomed to being controlled by our first interpretations of those energy exchange experiences or the interpretations enforced upon us by other people. Everyone knows about making a mistake and then being declared bad by other people and even by ourselves. To make a mistake means we made a mistake, period. The story we make up about that, or other people make up about that, is a whole different ballgame. And the actual cause of our mistakes is almost always a lack of awareness. We don't generally make mistakes for the hell of it. Oh, I just felt like making a mistake. Oh, I just felt like hitting myself in the hand with a hammer. That's not true. It's usually a lack of awareness. Somebody who lacks awareness about how to handle a hammer or any other tool is likely to make mistakes with it. And as we gain awareness, as we gain knowledge, as we gain skill, we're going to be more apt to be able to produce desirable results with it. And when we do make a mistake, this is what it does not mean. It does not mean we are bad. If your view of life is that life is consciousness in motion, and you and I are consciousness in motion, growing our own consciousness is how we will be able to afford to live to be 120 and healthy. Growing our consciousness is what will determine that we can afford to live to be 120 and healthy. Money will not be the determining factor in living to be 120 and healthy. consciousness is the determining factor. All people, rich, poor, old, young, female, male, are conscious beings in the ocean of divine consciousness. Becoming more and more conscious means we are more and more closely connected to divine consciousness, which is our source of life, the power that keeps us alive, and more closely connected to our true selves. Being courageous enough to travel this path means we've got to be willing to think and feel and try to expand our awareness. And if we're willing to do that, it says we can afford to live to be 120 and healthy. I would like to end the service with a prayer. This is the pluralized and modified version of the prayer from Letter 8 in Christ Returns, Reveals Startling Truth. I've included Marianne in it. Marianne, to me, was the epitome, the physical manifestation of what love in action really is and was. Father, Mother, Life, Marianne, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us, again and again and again. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness. And as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves, our lives, our family, and our friends into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.